My name is David Hudson, and I'm here to moderate the panel, Lonely Girl 15, a case study. And to introduce our Lonely Girl creators, producers, we've got Mesh Flinders, Greg Goodstein.
Goodfried.
Oh, Goodfried. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. And Miles Beckett there, who's
Hi.
Busily preparing something. And any moment that you're ready, Miles, just let us know.
Yeah, we'll see if it works. I'm trying to get something on the computer to work, which is always challenging.
Okay, good. Before, one of the things I'm...
Yes. Kind of darker than I want to get
on. Can we get a little bit light on Miles?
No, it's on all of us.
On all of us? Okay.
I think I can see you guys better than you can see us.
Okay, good. We were all kind of curious as to who would show up, and it's a nice-sized crowd, and what we're wondering is how familiar you are. So I think there are two ends of the scale. On one end, there's people who have heard of Lonely Girl 15, have maybe seen the cover story in Wired or seen it mentioned on the news or something like that, but have never really watched an episode or followed it. And then on the other end of the scale would be like the obsessive fans who actually take part in the community and that sort of thing. So let's take people who've heard of it first and don't know much about it. How can you? Oh, okay. Wow. Good. Good. Because
nice.
You'll be introduced then with some videos in a moment. And any people really deeply involved in the whole Lonely Girl 15 phenomenon who are deep into the sites and just...
I'm dying to tell you something. May I do that?
Yeah, please.
I'm a producer. I was in L.A. like 2 weeks ago in Beverly Hills, and I met Crystal Farms, who's the grocery store owner. She was talking to somebody about 60 years old, and said, and that's why I got interested in since then. I've been checking into it. I mean, anybody that excited in Beverly Hills? So I'm
cool.
Sorry, I thought that would give you guys a challenge.
That's very cool.
Very cool. Very cool.
Okay. Do we have a sample then?
Sure. So. Just in a word, Lonely Girl 15 is a interactive internet serial drama that's told in a short format. So each video is approximately 2 minutes long, and we put up about 5 videos a week. The reason a lot of you have heard of it is because initially people thought that she was a real person who was video blogging about her life. But after a few months, we revealed that it was indeed a fictional show. But there was a lot of press surrounding that initial mystery. Since then, it's become a very popular serial drama, sort of in the vein of a Buffy or a Dawson's Creek or something like that. But the way that we tell the story is kind of unique. So I'm going to try to get our website up here. It should work. And I can show you some of the original videos. We can show you some of the new videos. And then we're going to actually attempt to upload a new video in real time, which it's processing right now. And you can watch sort of the community response as it happens. So let's start with the old video.
Are we going to show Peace Offering?
Yes.
I'll give a little... to kind of build on what Miles is saying. So the way we look at the show is, as kind of a whole picture, is there's basically 3 components to it. There's the kind of top level show that we produce. So we have our actors and write scripts and direct and edit them and upload them to our site. The second component, so, just a show. Anyone could just sit there for 2 minutes, watch it, and go back to what they were doing. The second component is we have this interactive element where we treat the characters as if they're real people. So because they started out as the community thought they were real, it's just, continued to build on that. And examples of that are that you can send private messages to the characters. They'll answer you back. We answer every single email we get in character. My wife actually does that. She spends a lot of time.
Yes.
She's the head of our interactive department. And the... so we do that. So we also let the fans text on the videos themselves. So you see text comments down there. There's 142 on the video we put up last night. So to give you a little, and to build on the interactive, as the community has the ability to text on the videos, to send private messages, they can also make their own videos and tell the characters what they think they should do and interact as if they're real people. So we use that community input as kind of writers and producers of the show to help us move the plot along. The big plot points, we decide, we know where it's going, but there's a lot of flexibility from one video to the next. So in the video we're about to show you, just to give you a little setup, Bree is the 16-year-old video blogger who's homeschooled and has crazy, bizarre religious parents. She has a best friend named Daniel. And Bree and Daniel, they were dating a little, they were fighting, and it was kind of going back and forth, and we started getting feedback from the community to Bree saying, you know, Bree, make up with Daniel. He's a really good guy, and you guys should start dating, and you should make a move, and we don't like to see you fight. So based on getting, you know, thousands of emails and comments to that effect, we made the video peace offering.
I was really depressed when I got out of bed this morning. I'm filming alone again today because Daniel and I still aren't talking. Daniel's my only friend other than my stuffed animals. And let's just say, not speaking to your only friend really sucks. I guess this whole putting personal videos up on the internet thing wasn't such a good idea. I read some of your guys' comments, and that really cheered me up. A lot of you think that Daniel and I should reconcile. I completely agree with you. So I've decided to make a peace offering. But not just any peace offering. I'm gonna do my research first. Okay, so this is interesting. The Kishilo Indians from Central America used to burn a monkey as a peace offering. Okay, that's not gonna work.
I get up on the town, a place I don't even know. I get up for the town. I run into you all, compromising my path. I run into you all.
Okay, so when the pilgrims first came to the New World, they made a peace offering of sorts to the Native Americans. They made a huge feast, and everyone was invited. So that's it, Daniel. Pea Monkey and I will cook you a great big feast, and then everything will be back to normal.
And who knows if they're right, I hope to God that they are, cause it's all that I have. Oh, believe in something similar to a faith in this goddamn town.
On second thoughts, I'm a really lousy cook, and I don't know how much help our primate friend would be. Will an olive branch do?
I go out all the time, just like nobody else. I go out on the town. Love a lot, sleep around. Or is that my other self? Love a lot, sleep around. And I know that I see you.
Okay, sure. Good. Oh, great.
So that video got about 650,000 views on YouTube. And that's kind of the numbers we're dealing with. We get, you know, we put out 5 new videos a week and on our website and on YouTube. And over the course of a week, we're ranging in the 1.5 to 2 million collective views. And on our website, we have anywhere from 25 to 30,000 unique visitors a day and like 150,000 over the course of a month who are passionate about the show. And you know, that's the perfect antidote. Bree was upset about Daniel, and people commented her, and she looked right at their eyes into the camera, and she said, I'm going to listen to what you guys have to say, and I'm going to try to make a peace offering.
So that video is kind of representative of what Lonely Girl was, which is, I mean, first of all, we shot that with a webcam, which cost us $130, and the audio sounds terrible because we thought we were recording from actually a really crappy external microphone, but it turned out we were actually recording from the internal mic on the webcam all along, which I was horrified to realize one day. So since then, it's changed a little bit. We now shoot mainly with couple handheld cameras.
Can I interject? Hmm? Before we move on, can we back up a little bit and talk about whose idea this was? A lot of people kind of do know this, but just very, very briefly, let's spend half a minute. Whose idea this was? Who Bree is? What's the very first idea? Who came up?
Sure. So our backgrounds are pretty diverse. I'm actually a medical physician. I was a surgery resident. But I was in a plastic surgery program, and I quit after my internship because I had always been a writer. I was a comedy writer in college and made a couple short films during medical school, and it was sort of something that I was much more interested in doing but never had really decided to pursue. And when I saw the emergence of podcasting and video podcasting, I saw it as a real opportunity for kind of anybody to have access to distribution channels. And so I started my own podcasting company and was doing like comedy video podcasts with friends of mine in the LA area who are comedians. And while I was doing that, I was on YouTube all the time. And I was kind of obsessed with the fact that there was this growing website for video content and that if I could create something on that website, I wouldn't have to draw traffic to my own site. So I was watching, I noticed that really the content that people were watching was either stolen episodes of The Daily Show or video bloggers. And there was something really compelling about the format of video blogging and listening to somebody's life. But real life is pretty inconsistent. So, you'd watch one video from one of these kids and it'd be great, and then the next video would be horrible. So I thought, well, what if we created a fictional video blogger and scripted some sort of a story, and if there was kind of a creepy mystery component to it, that would be pretty compelling. So that was the sort of inception of the idea, and that was back in, I think, February. I kind of had that idea February, March, and I just sort of sat on it. And then I met Mesh at a friend's birthday party and told him this idea, and we sort of just hit it off and went from there.
Yeah.
You can tell your background.
So my story is I'm a screenwriter. I graduated college in 2003, and like every other struggling sort of young wannabe filmmaker, I took jobs as assistants to various directors and wrote a lot. Didn't really get anything, right out of the gate. I finally got a fellowship to go write for a year and or 6 months, and I wrote a couple screenplays, came back to LA, still didn't have much luck with them. I actually, about in 2004, I finally got a break when I won an award. The Panavision New Filmmakers Award allows you to make your first short film, gives you the money and the resources to do that. So I'd done that. But I was still basically living hand to mouth, just whatever jobs I could find. I was a school teacher for a while, just whatever I could do. And, about a year ago, I had the good fortune of a director that I'd been an assistant to, pitching a project to a producer and recommending me to write it. And so I got, hired to write my first screenplay, or not my first, but the first that I got paid for anyway. And, that was sort of where I was at. I was actually living with my aging grandmother at the time. I was completely broke. And then about 2 months after that, I met Miles. And, I really, when he told me that idea, the first thing that came to mind for me was Orson Welles and War of the Worlds, which was this elaborate hoax that used technology that was new to most of the country to tell a story. And the technology was so new that the citizens of the country really, in America in 1940, they trusted it. They didn't know what to make of it. And that to me was right where internet video was about a year ago. And so that was the first thing that came to mind. I thought, wow, that is a great way to, break down walls into the movie business. That sounds awesome. So that was really my, that was my first thought, was just this sounds like a cool way to make movies. And initially we had thought, well, we'll do this for, a few months and we'll generate some big buzz and then, we'll make a film out of it. And that was kind of naive. we had no idea. And I'm going to let Greg talk now because he's very good at talking about sort of what happened in those first few months when we noticed that really we kind of stumbled on a new art form.
So I'm a lawyer. the actual one with a day job when they came to me. And so basically I met Miles in February of last year when he was starting his video podcast company. And we met through mutual friends at a party, and he came up to me and told me what he was doing. And I was doing entertainment transaction work and copyright and some new media, so I was pretty interested in podcasting and social networking. And did a lot of the legal work for his company. And then when he came up with the idea, he met Mesh. The two of them spent a couple weeks together really hashing out Bree, the character, the storyline, these kind of mysterious elements that you saw in the first few months of the show, and then came to me and basically said, can we do this? Are we going to get sued? And I said, sure.
Or shot,
right? I said, you might get shot, probably not going to get sued. I said, don't try to sell anything to anyone, and certainly don't ask them for money. Don't say 2 months into it, I need to run away from home, everyone send me $15. That'll be a very bad idea.
I thought would have been a great idea.
So I came on board, basically about a month before we even casted Bree, and, started out doing some of the legal advising and the business work. And then, with my background, I just thought this is so relevant. This is something we need to do now. And literally when Miles first pitched it to me, a month before it started, he told me the whole idea. And at the end of it, he said, after this, we're going to be on magazine covers. And I said to him, you're nuts, but that's a good pitch. Why not? I'll give it a shot. So, that's what happened. We got together and we did the show. And
so I think this is a good segue into another video. So basically, like Mesh said, we really didn't know where it was going to go. We thought it was a good idea. And we thought that if we could get, good actors and tell a compelling story that people would want to watch it. We didn't know two things. Number one, we didn't know how big of an audience there was for internet video at the time, because it was still kind of, very techie with podcasting. And I think YouTube really changed that and brought it more mainstream. And then the second thing was, we didn't really know when there was the reveal that it was fictional, whether or not people would want to continue watching, you know, this character and this story, or if there was more of that allure in her being real. But what we saw was that, first of all, the view numbers were just astronomical. We put our first video up on June 12th, and by July 4th, we had a video that in 48 hours broke 500,000 views. And then after that, every video got 250,000 of views, 300,000. And now, pretty much, we get an average of 300,000 views per video. And again, over the course of the week, it comes out to about 1.5 million views. And then we have, you know, a very, very rabid fan base on our website, these probably 30 to, you know, 50,000 people per day that are just very obsessed with the show. That's number one. And then number two, that when it was revealed that it was fictional, actually what we found is that we, you know, there were probably some people that were watching that went away, but for the most part, we gained a huge audience that sort of found out about it through the press. And interestingly enough, it's very much like a soap opera on the internet. So our audience is about 70 to 80% female, and it ranges in age from about 14 to probably 40s. We see some people that are watching, but it's probably in clusters in the mid-20s, a lot of grad students and people in college and things like that. So because the numbers were so big, and because, you know, at least for me, you know, I am a big tech person. I love the internet. I went to Berkeley for undergrad and was there during the first dot-com boom, and really would have much rather have worked for a dot-com, even if it went out of business, than have gone to medical school. So I saw this as an opportunity to create sort of a both technological and entertainment property. So what we've done is we've continued telling the story, and we've made it a lot more elaborate. So I'll show you a video, and then I'm just going to show it to you, and then I'll kind of explain what it all means.
You're going to have no idea what's going on, right? But we'll fill you in after.
I'll fill you in after. So let me find the video.
When did we uploaded this February 10th. And again, the point of showing you this is to show you where Lonely Girl, where it was, which was a girl in her bedroom, you know, being cute and innocent, to where it is now, which is a much more compelling, robust show like a Lost or 24 or something.
Daniel, save my life. It's the least I can do. Take care of him, okay?
Okay. We're getting impatient.
Wait, stop!
Thank you. That was the human ransom.
So that's probably the most cinematic we ever get. But we still... So Bree's left the room. So basically that video, Bree had to leave because her parents were part of this weird religious organization, which has now been revealed to be this sort of international secret society called the Order. And we've massively ramped up the plot. So why did we do that? Well, when there was this big reveal that she was fictional, we realized pretty rapidly that in order to retain an audience, we would have to, you know, start telling a much more compelling story and a much more compelling plot. It was something that we had planned for from the beginning because, again, our initial thought was, well, we'll have this girl in a room that's blogging. We'll have it lead up to a cliffhanger, which will be she'll run away because her parents are weird and religious and they wanted to prepare for some ceremony. And then we'll have a really cool movie that's kind of an on-the-run type movie. So rather than doing that as a movie, we've done it on the show on the internet. So Bree ran away from home. This secret society is after her. They want her for some ceremony. She's traveling around the country with her friends, Daniel and Jonas. And then there are a whole bunch of other characters that are starting to be merged into the story. And what we still do is we shoot everything as if it's real. So everything is filmed by a character. And that character edits their own videos and uploads these videos, to the internet for people to see. So we kind of use that as both it's very cool creatively sometimes. Sometimes it's very limiting, but we kind of work within that constraint. So that video that you see there was shot actually from two different characters' point of views. Sort of normal looking footage was filmed by Jonas, who's Bree's friend that she's traveling around with. That was at the beginning, at the end. And then the middle footage was shot by this other character named Tachyon, who's sort of a secret agent type, who basically appeared at the last minute to save the day. So we are able to kind of achieve some of this third person, more cinematic look by having characters film other characters, or by having found footage, or by having security cameras. Anything that's sort of real footage that we could actually get from the real world is something that we can use within the confines of sort of the show, the way we tell it.
Yeah, and just to build on the treating characters as real people. So we used to have this character who lived in London. And, you know, everyone, when a character is going to make a video, say they're making a video about eating breakfast, they can't upload that video, say it's breakfast, you know, Tuesday morning. They can't upload that video till Tuesday afternoon or, you know, early Tuesday evening because they have to eat breakfast, film themselves, spend some time editing, choosing music, whatever, and then uploading it. So this character in London, we had to upload these videos. Miles had to at like 3 o'clock in the morning because that's when she's going to be awake in London. And people would email her, and we had to not log on to her account unless it was, you know, normal London hours and send responses. And so it's like he's saying, it certainly makes the show really cool and interactive. It's definitely a pain for the three of us who spend all our time working on it. But
I think, and that sort of leads into the idea that the way that we see Lonely Girl 15 and the way that we see internet video, like going forward, and the way that we're going to treat shows that we create is that really the video is kind of the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the show experience. You know, our videos are only, what's that?
I was going to say, well,
I can show, yeah. So the videos are only 2 minutes long, right? So why do people sit all day on our website, which they do? I mean, if you look at a video like Human Ransom, it has 1,128 comments on it. People are talking obsessively about the plot.
And if you look at the right side, what's actually really cool, so getting back to what our show is, there's that three elements of a professionally produced show that you can sit back and watch, this interactive show that you can participate in, you know, by commenting. We actually do a lot of puzzles in the show. Are you guys familiar with ARGs? I don't know, like not of, you know, ARGs are alternate reality games, which is basically a sequence of puzzles that a community gets together to unlock. And as you unlock a puzzle, it kind of pushes a narrative, you know, plot point forward. So we'll kind of have videos where Daniel will have a puzzle that he needs to open a flash drive and to open, you know, he needs to open that to get a file to help him figure out what to do next. And he won't know how to open the flash drive. So he will basically say to the community, I have this flash drive. You can access, you know, the file on our website. When you click on the file that says, you know, need password, here's a riddle that I was given to help me open it. The community then will spend the next day or two trying to solve the riddle. Once they solve the riddle, they'll email Daniel and saying, hey, we solved the riddle. Here's the password. And then he'll come on camera 2 days later saying, thank you, John and Mary and Tim out there in the community for helping me solve the puzzle. And then he will be able to proceed forward with the story. So that's the second element. And then the last element we do is this whole weaving in the user-generated content that our fans create naturally. So as you see on the right side of the screen, those thumbnails, those are fan videos. So fans can make their own videos and upload them to our website and obviously to YouTube. And what people do is they create themselves as characters in our world. So there might be a kid who's Bree's brother. There might be someone who's her cousin or someone who just wants to tell their own story. Maybe they're a bad guy and they work for the Order and they're trying to take down Bree. You know, whatever these people want to tell, we invite them to tell the story.
And actually, I think that I have a pretty good one here I can show. Yeah.
Yeah, this is cool.
So this guy has put up a series of videos, I think there's about five at this point, where he's sort of telling his own story, again, living within the universe of the Order and the, you know, people who are fighting the Order. It's a bit cryptic.
And Bree, one final thing. No matter what, you cannot do the ceremony. No matter what they do or who they do it to, you cannot do the ceremony. They'll do anything to get you to do it.
So that was just that was just a fan video, and I'm pretty sure, I'm not positive, but if you take the description, you saw the sequence of numbers and letters, and there was probably 100 clues in that video. I'm pretty sure that guy went out and actually did a drop. So he's leading the community to a certain location, probably somewhere in Barstow, where they're going to go to a park, and under a bench there's going to be an envelope, and you're going to open that envelope, and there might be a postcard or something in it. So he is leading his group, his fan base that he has kind of built from our site on this kind of ARG type journey, and telling a story with real world elements. And he just does it.
What kind of community interaction are you seeing around the user generated videos in terms of views and content, comments relative to the ones that you produce yourself?
So right now there's not a ton of interactive functionality with the user videos on our site, just because of the way it's designed. I mean, in terms of views, some of the better videos will get in the thousands of views. Right now, the way it works is it's very YouTube-like. So you upload a video as a response to one of our videos, and it appears on the right, and then sort of, as you can see, all the responses are down there, so you can always get to all the videos. It's not that easy to follow someone else's narrative right now on the website, because you kind of have to jump from one of our videos to the other and try to find this other person's videos. We're doing a rebuild to the website that hopefully we'll be launching either at the beginning of next month or the month following, where we'll be making it a lot easier for people to like admin their own storylines and present their own storylines on our website and actually vote among the community, and sort of the best storylines will float to the top. So there will be more coming. There is some discussion of the fan-created material in our forum. So in addition to being able to comment on our videos, we also have a chat room, and then we also have a forum. So we also have a wiki-style encyclopedia. So if you go into the forum here, There's actually a whole section, fan creations. So there's a section for fan creations, so people can discuss it in there.
Did you? No problem. Have a question? Yeah.
How do you guys pay for this?
So that's a good question. When we first started, I was working at urgent care clinics. So when I left my program, I was working about 3 to 5 days a week. And then through Lonely Girl, I was working a few days a week, and that kind of got weaned back and back and back and back till I wasn't working there at all. But we got a little bit of money from my parents in the beginning, which we needed to basically to pay the actors. Within about a week or two of videos going up, people were starting to kind of recognize them. Jessica had a couple people like kind of look at her strangely when she was at a Barnes and Noble. Jessica plays Brie. And so we thought, well, you know, we didn't like hide our IPs or do anything really elaborate to hide the fact that we were making the videos, but I figured let's get them off the street. So, we paid them a little bit of money so that they didn't have to work. And then also for us, as we were getting more and more involved and weren't able to work day jobs, we started paying ourselves as well. So initially my parents, we were running out of money, repeatedly and rapidly through the fall and winter, which was very stressful and very frightening. We had some fan donations, which helped out a lot. But then ultimately we were able to get some investment money. And that's helped carry us through, up into this point right now. Going forward, we will be doing, advertising. So we have a whole business model that's built largely around sort of the reality TV model with product integration, in a category exclusive fashion. So going to, you know, Nike, and they'll cover like shoes and we won't have competitors, et cetera. And then building advertising around that brand integration, both in the post roll ads. If you notice at the end of the video, our videos in Rever, there's ads at the end of them. So, ads at the end of the videos, branding of pages and things like that.
Yeah. And, just to talk for a minute about brand integration, so it doesn't sound like we're the biggest sellouts in the world. Because of the kind of how we tell the story, how that these are real kids, that you can talk to them and they'll talk back to you, it actually makes total sense for them to be using real products and kind of makes more sense than if we, you know, try to avoid it. So if these kids in a video held up water, you know, and it said on it water like it would on a sitcom, that'd be totally bizarre and that'd be completely unrealistic. You know, it should say Arrowhead or Sparklets or whatever. So it kind of is a real natural fit for, you know, them. If they're going to be using a cell phone, it has to be a real cell phone that there's a real company attached to it. And then it's kind of storytelling. It's actually cool for us to be able to have access to real world brands for these ARG type things we talk about, because we might want to do a plot point where, you know, a character sends a package, you know, from one character to the, to another person. And it would be amazing if, you know, we could actually have FedEx kind of partner with us, and you can go to like the FedEx.com website and type in a tracking number and have the community be able to follow the tracking number, the status of the package, know what's going to be in Des Moines on Tuesday, and then have people show up in Des Moines.
We could
and
even
like
have them intercept
the PO box.
Intercept, yeah, I mean, the package mid-route or something like that.
And so, yeah.
I have a multi-layered question. I would confuse myself with so much on my mind. Genius stuff. When you started, you just distributing your website and YouTube. Now, where else are you distributing? And then, where do you look to grow in terms of production value, platform, distribution platforms? Where are you trying to go?
So I'll take the first part on the distribution. So right now it's still YouTube and our website. You know, going forward, we're trying to kind of build out a syndication model. So the goal would be to be on, you know, the competitors, the VOs and the Juice and the live videos and all these people where they are, you know, open to monetization. It takes us a long time, literally just takes us a long time to upload videos. So if we are going to go out to other websites and platforms, there needs to kind of be an, you know, economic upside for us. Okay, cool.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, so we want to do that. And then the kind of beautiful thing of that is that it's going to help us in two parts. You know, part number one is if brand integration is a component, you know, if Coca-Cola is paying me, they don't care where my video is. They just care that it's being seen by 10 million people across multiple platforms. That's fantastic. And then the other part is we can use all of those new platforms to then turn and drive everyone back to the core of the show, which is our website. And that's where all the interaction goes on. That's where the community goes on. So people who get into the storyline will naturally come to us. So
yeah,
kind of best of both worlds.
Still remain in your site.
Absolutely.
And continue to grow, and you can actually get additional impressions from the other places, city gates, drive traffic.
Exactly. And again, with the sort of iceberg analogy, really you're only going to get the video content on these other sites. The whole rest of the show, which really is what psychs people, you know, up, the interactivity, the talking to the forums, the creating your own storylines, that's really only on our site. I mean, for one, we'd rather have it on our site, but also we use the technology as part of our creative process. So we actually, as part of our rebuild to our website, we're designing certain features that are tech features in terms of, like, you know, ways that you can upload the video. It's kind of hard to explain, but it'll make sense eventually when we launch the site. But we actually will be using those features as part of the narrative. One example I can give right now is that, like, so we have a chat room on our site. When we created the chat room, we thought, hey, why don't we put it as part of the plot? So we actually had a video where Bree's room, I won't show because it's a few videos, but Bree's room was ransacked by the order. And she came on camera and said, hey, I don't really know what to do. But I'll be in the chat room at 6 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. Let me know what you think. And so this was a while ago. We were on a shared server and we had crappy chat software. So we had 35,000 people hit our site simultaneously. Site went down. Site came back up in about 20 minutes because we had a guy helping us out. We were using user plane, so we could only get like 100 people in a room. So we had like 10 or 15 rooms simultaneously open with 100 people in each room. And then people were running an IM chat session externally. And then they were relaying information from room to room to room, sort of like a giant game of telephone.
And we were sitting there, and there was, the three of us, my wife, who was Bree, and we were literally in my apartment, each on laptops on our lap, talking to the fans, and they were all talking to the characters themselves.
And so this was like 2 months after people knew it was fictional, and everybody was talking to the characters as if they were real, giving them advice for how they could, overcome the fact that they had just lost all their money. And then what we did,
we couldn't even get into the chat room.
Yeah, first we
so we had the main chat room, which was called Bree Chat, and it was supposed to be at 6 o'clock, and literally like 4:45, it filled up. So we couldn't get our characters in, so we had to create and then at that point, like Bree Chat 1 through 13 had filled up, so we had to be Bree Chat 14, and we were in there. And that felt got kind of relayed back to the community.
And so then what we actually did is there was another character at the time, Jonas, who we introduced him as a fan, and his videos actually appeared on the right side of the page as a fan video. And people debated about whether or not he was part of the show or whether or not a fan had created him. And so we had his character appear in the chat room, and he had money, and his parents had disappeared when he was younger, and he had a lot of money in a big house. And he said, hey, why don't you guys come crash at my place? And so... So then Bree said, I don't know if I trust you. You're just some random dude on the internet. And so then over the next week or two, we reintroduced that into the video and said, hey, if you weren't in the chat, this guy Jonas showed up and said we could crash with him. What do you think? And then we kind of went back and forth with the community and ended up sending her to Jonas's house.
So in terms of also production value as well.
Oh, right.
You increased it.
Yeah. The reality is that video that you just saw was filmed with the same equipment we used to film with. I mean, digital production is pretty amazing. I mean, even with a pretty cheap camera, you can make things look good if you take the time. I mean, people also used to talk a lot in the early videos about how great our lighting was. And it was like the big debate was the lighting is professional. It was really just time. I mean, we had a desk lamp and a window, and it was just taking literally sitting there for sometimes 45 minutes. I would sit there with the window shade, adjusting it until the lighting was like perfect. And then it was actually horrible because the webcam doesn't have you can't lock the exposure down. So it would keep fluctuating in and out. So we would do like multiple takes if the exposure got screwed up. It was very frustrating at times. So the answer is we will always shoot it from the character's point of view. So for instance, if there was a character that had like really nice cameras and there was a reason for them to have it, then that would make sense. If it's a kid who would only have a really crappy webcam, then their footage is going to look really crappy. So it's kind of whatever the reality allows.
I see a bunch of questions.
Go ahead.
Hi. Two short questions. Number one, you mentioned you went into this because you want to be noticed, and you were naive, you said, in your assumptions. So has Ari given you a call yet, or what's the deal?
Ari
Emanuel.
Yeah, we're actually represented by CAA.
Okay.
So Ari's not going to call us.
No.
You don't have to fight our guys.
Yeah, unless he's going to steal you.
We had a lot of mesh. I mean, you want to talk or we can?
Yeah, sure. I was the one who said that. And, I've wanted to be a filmmaker since I was a little kid. I had different backgrounds than these guys. And, definitely using Lonely Girl to write and direct my first feature this year, which they're going to be producing and I'm going to be directing. So that, absolutely. We're jumping onto other platforms with that. We're also developing a Lonely Girl 15 film, which working on the treatment for right now, and been a lot of interest in both projects so far. So does that kind of answer the question? I mean, we're still at the very early stages. Yeah. We've really only... I mean, personally, and I think for you guys as well, since the new year, had time to think about anything but Lonely Girl. And we barely even have time now. It was 24/7, from June 12th when we launched the first video until the last 6 months have gone by in a blur. So we're only just now able to personally for me at least, just able to step back and go, oh, that's right. I was going to be a filmmaker. That's right. I want to write a script and I want to direct this. And so I'm kind of getting back to my roots in that. It's really actually good. And it's actually informed my writing and directing on Lonely Girl a lot to kind of remember that. And, cause you can get caught up completely in the new technology and everything. It's just such a whirlwind. It's so exciting.
Yeah. And that was my other question, too. Are you where you wanted to be? Because I think you were going to write sitcoms or whatever, be a script writer, and I forget what else, but you know, that's not where you're ending up. All of a sudden, it's like an Alias type of thriller. And so is this, have you got the tiger by the tail and ended up where you didn't maybe expect to be or didn't want to be, or are you happy where it's ending up?
For me, this is exactly what I wanted. This is my dream. You know, I absolutely love the internet. I love technology, and I love writing, directing, producing. You know, like, yeah, I wrote in college, and I'd made a couple of short films, but I also, you know, read, you know, blogs, and, you know, I'm a big internet geek. So for me, this is perfect. And actually, we're in a good position right now because we have had a lot of access to the traditional Hollywood channels of distribution because of this. And, you know, through our agents, right after the big announcement, we went on like a tour of Hollywood, and we met with all the different TV studio heads and, you know, whatnot.
It was literally like just,
it was
open top bus.
Oh, kind of like Universal
there's
Studios.
Fox, there's Warner Brothers. Hi. We did Lonely Girl.
So it was really fun. We got some offers for sort of overall production deals at different studios. Ultimately, we turned them down, which we did because, again, at our core, we really, really want to do internet video and internet. I mean, it's really bigger than that. It's like internet shows, interactive shows. And most of the people that we had talked to, it was very clear to us that they didn't quite get it. And that is, and most importantly, it's hard for these big companies because they have partnerships and deals already in place. So, you know, if you go to a Viacom, they're not necessarily going to want to work with MySpace because they're owned by News Corp. So we don't want that to be an issue. You know, we want to be able to make a show and say, okay, this is going to be a TV internet hybrid show, and we're going to sell, you know, one part to MTV and one part to MySpace and one part to a different mobile phone company. I don't care if you're working with Verizon already, you know? So it was a struggle. And the result of that was that, you know, we were running out of money constantly, especially through the winter. But luckily we found, you know, some people to work with that shared that vision as well.
Great. Thanks a lot. Good luck.
Thanks.
That's actually, Miles brings up a really interesting point. He covered the sort of how you make money aspect of it. The technology, really it's just a door opener for people that, you know, that didn't have the ability or the wherewithal to make these ideas they had into films before. I use films very loosely, into, you know, from a 2-minute video to a feature film. I think that's where the technology really opens doors for filmmakers now, is that, you know, you can get 200, 300, 400,000 people, and in some cases millions of people, to see your work that it might have taken, I don't know, like that you did with like a webcam, a little video camera, and like your little brother. I mean, it's just, and the possibilities that we're only just realizing what the possibilities are. So that to me is the most exciting reason to be in this space, because it just opens so many doors.
So
let's do a couple more questions. About you guys,
I have two questions.
Okay.
Last summer, I spent a lot of time playing the Lost ARG with Rachel Blake, and that was really cool. My wife didn't understand why I was like so into it. So I was just kind of wondering, you know, did you guys, you know, participate in that or get some ideas from it?
You know,
and the second question was, it was really cool at the end, like the Lost ARG. Rachel Blake actually showed up at a panel discussion and in the Comic Con. Like, will Bree be showing up in any of your panels?
So I'll kind of tackle the first question. The whole ARG. Truthfully, I didn't even know what an ARG was probably 4 months ago. And so I definitely didn't play The Lost Experience. Now I would have loved to, because they're really cool. But what happened with Lonely Girl was that when we did the first video, and as it kind of spun out to, is this a real girl, is it not, we actually just naturally attracted the ARG community because they thought we were making an ARG. And they thought that the goal of the ARG was to find out who Mesh, Miles, and Greg are. And so because of that, they started like investigating our families, and they started... It got totally nuts.
His wedding photos were in our forum.
Yeah, they found my dad, their kind of first clue to the ARG community, that this might be an ARG and who might be behind it, is that about a month after we put the first video, people started selling Lonely Girl 15 t-shirts and hats and mugs. And we were like, you know, someday we might want to do that, so we need the trademark for it. Again, not knowing there was this ARG community out there, that when we register the trademark, it becomes a public record after about 6 weeks. People went and searched the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office to find out if somebody registered Lonely Girl 15, And it turned out they did, and it was my dad, and it was his home address. So all over, you know, our website and blog, you know, the blogosphere was Ken Goodfried, you know, is the smoking gun here, and he's somehow connected. And they went to my mom, and then my sister's like 25 and works in Hollywood and likes to hike and has a boyfriend. And people started saying, oh, my God, is this Bree or is this Bree's friend? And so there was like a post in our forum one day. I woke up at 3 a.m. and it was like the case against Lisa Goodfried. And I was just like, this is totally nuts. You guys are scaring me. I was
you
like,
called her,
I was,
right? She was, literally...
I called her. She had to pull down her MySpace page. She had to call her friends, pull down their MySpace pages because we just didn't want to be found out unless we could kind of control the press once we were found out. So because of kind of that initial thing, we attracted this amazing community, though, of people who thought they were playing a game and were actually doing it in a really endearing, supportive way. We just had to guide them to the game is not real life, Miles Mesh and Greg. The game is figure out what 10-12-06 means and what, you know, all these kind of clues and stuff that we embed in the videos that, you know, these, you know, codes that Daniel has to unlock. Play with those. You know, don't kind of play with my wedding pictures and my family. So going forward, we're going to kind of do more ARG stuff with the show. And then
live appearances of the characters are definitely in the future. For us right now, it's just been a resource issue. It's a lot of work, and we only have a handful of people working on it. And so we find ourselves constantly consumed with, you know, writing, shooting, editing, and then trying to come up with puzzles and things like that. So the more elaborate live interactions where we probably would need like security or something, I don't know, so something bad didn't happen, we're kind of waiting because we want to make sure we do it right when we do it.
I want to do another question, and then we'll do our thing.
Okay.
I was introduced to Lonely Girl in August through a show on NPR. And I was listening and really got into it and dug it and saw that every time you posted a new video, the LA Times would write a story about it.
Yeah.
And then was really following it when it was kind of being uncovered. And it almost became its own adventure in itself when the person did some cyber sleuthing and found out that the domain was registered to an agency. And it turned out, even on NPR, they said that the tribute to Lonely Girl page was registered before the first video was ever launched. But once the video was released, and once the cat was out of the bag and it was sort of not on your terms, it may have been shocking at first, but was it almost a relief? And now it seems like you're able to express your creativity a little bit more.
Yeah, so the answer is absolutely. Like we said, when the initial idea that I had was, let's create a fictional video blogger. And I thought, I don't know if people will think she's real or not. Like, I didn't know how like good of a job we could do making it appear real. I didn't know how much tracking people could do. I knew about IP tracking. I know I could have hidden my IP address if I wanted to. When I registered the domain name, it was like a week before we put videos up. I had already registered it, and then I had domains by proxy, so it was a hidden registrar. But I realized, oh, crap, you can still see the date. But we kind of explained it with the characters, like that Daniel had registered it early, but it was kind of hard to explain that away. But anyway, so you know, as the press got more and more intense, it was incredibly stressful. I mean, we were just freaked out, and especially because we didn't really know what the reaction was going to be. I mean, in our heads all along, we were trying to tell a story and do something really cool, not fool people. Like, that wasn't the intent of it. And so we were worried, well, how is this going to play in the press? And so when it did come out, we were very concerned about that. Luckily, you know, people treated us very fairly, we thought, which was cool. And then once it was out of the bag, it was very creatively liberating because, although, again, we treat everything as if it's real and we shoot everything as if it's real, we have more freedom now because people aren't analyzing every video. I mean, we literally didn't want to film anything outdoors again after we put that one video up where people were analyzing the plants in the background.
Yeah, people got a botanist to go do, like, you know, inspect our, and people would take, just to build on that, people would take our videos and they would go and they would take a video of Bree's room and they would Photoshop it and they'd circle every single item in the room and then they'd draw an arrow to like SKU numbers to Target and IKEA.
And Bree's room was my bedroom.
Yeah, it was his bedroom. Which was
that was the other thing. So
bizarre, right? You got your own issues on that one. But then one person came up with this thing where they kind of found out that there was Target, there was IKEA, and then she wore a couple dresses from Forever 21. And so somebody was like, oh my God, I did a national survey, a triangulation, and the only place where there's a Target and IKEA and a Forever 21 within 100 miles of each other is Tempe, Arizona. And that was it. The show was filmed in Tempe, Arizona.
Yeah.
And we were just like, you guys are amazing.
Actually, that was kind of a relief because we were nowhere near Tempe, Arizona. But great.
So that was kind of the ARG community that, you know, came out of this. And those were the people that we had to wrap our arms around and embrace because we knew that if people were offended, if people didn't want to watch the show anymore because they really just wanted to watch a video blogger, then those people might leave, but these ARG people would stay.
We can take it.
Go ahead.
Sure. So this whole thing seemed to work out really well for you, kind of pretending this was real and then revealing that it was not. And you were worried about that. There had to have been some negative sides, some backlash, some people who were really invested to this real person when they found out she wasn't. Could you talk about that a little?
Yeah, there was a little bit, but very little and far less than I expected. And I think that the reason why is because people knew it was fake all along. I mean, if you look at the comments on the videos, the very, very first video we put up, people said, you don't look like you're 15. You look like you're 19. And it got more and more extreme. You know, by three videos in, people were debating about the lighting. By like, you know, six videos in, people were debating about whether we're using high def cameras or not. So the vast majority of people realized it probably was not real, but were suspending their disbelief to allow themselves to believe that it was real. There were a couple people on YouTube that like put up blogs where they were really upset. But actually some of those same people then put up blogs a few days later where they said, you know, it doesn't bother me as much and I'm still watching the videos.
And,
so
yeah. And the other thing too, right, and the other thing too is that it's like, you know, the loudest person in the room is going to be kind of the one who's disappointed. If you have a bad meal at a restaurant, you're going to write them a note. If you have a fantastic meal, you're never going to talk about it again. Right. So whether that's true or whether that makes us, you know, sleep better at night, that's kind of how we view the criticism we get. The few people that did voice their, you know, unhappiness, but kind of for us, the proof is in the fact that the video numbers are bigger than ever. You know, we have on YouTube, the day we announced that this is fictional, we had 22,000 subscribers and we're like the number third most popular subscriber of all time. Now we have 88,000 and we're number one by like almost double what the next person is. So
if you had been more careful, like in like really, really tried to fool people and were more successful in that, do you think it would have been different?
Yeah. And that's why we did it.
They would have been mad.
I mean, yeah. So that's why
if that had been the goal all along.
Right. Yeah. And that would have been the problem.
Yeah. I would have been pissed. I mean,
we made a conscious decision that the way we were going to treat Bree is that if somebody asked Bree a question, you know, what'd you eat for lunch today? You know, how was things with your parents? We answer every one of those. If somebody asked us a question, basically saying, are you an actress? Is this real? Is this fake? We just ignored it. And we did the same thing with the press. You know, Virginia Heffernan was the one who did that NPR report. And she wrote for the New York Times. And she wrote Bree a bunch of messages. And the first one started out, hey, Bree, how are you? How's life? Why are you video blogging? Second one was like, you know, how's things with your parents and Daniel? Third one was like, are you real? And we didn't answer the third one.
But truthfully, she's actually a really good case study on that because she, you know, came back and when it came out that the show was scripted and, you know, wasn't real, she went and said, bravo, hats off. And we didn't, I mean, you know, the cover story, our coming out cover story was in the LA Times. So she didn't have to do that. She could have been very bitter. And she came out and was very, you know, very positive about the show from then on. So.
And a month ago, she wrote a story on the front page of the New York Times Art and Style section reviewing Lonely Girl 15 as, and her first line of it was, I'm not going to talk about this as a web hoax or an internet phenom. Mm-hmm. I'm going to talk about this like a TV show. And she reviewed the characters and the plot and all those dynamics, which was great. Awesome for us. Yeah, let's go for it.
And before I walked in this room, I'd never even really heard of Lonely Girl 15. And so it really seems to me like you guys have caught lightning in a bottle. My question is how are you handling the sort of ramifications between the three of you working together? Bree, who probably, you know, a year ago was just some girl in California who's now, you know, fairly well known. Like, I mean, the sort of, how's the offline, you know, component coming together?
Well, first and foremost, the three of us are, you know, closer now than we ever were. As we go forward with our careers, as kind of we were talking about, you know, Miles and I, you know, probably have a little more of a goal of staying in this space and making just pure internet videos. Mesh is just, you know, a brilliant writer, director, and that part of him always wanted to make a feature. And we support that 100%. He will work on Lonely Girl, write, direct. But the cool thing of our show is production times are pretty short, so we can cram things together, get, you know, a good amount of videos, and then let people kind of go off and have their independence. And so, you know, he'll work with us and he'll do his own things. And with Jessica, the exact same situation. So we, you know, we have her do a contract, so she's going to work with us for a while. She also just loves doing the show. It made her super popular and she kind of has ownership of it as well. But she just went and shot a film with Lindsay Lohan and an independent film that took the entire month of February. So what did we do? We spent a lot of time in December, January, making sure we had enough videos to provide those five videos a week through the months of January and February to, you know, for her schedule and for other actors as well.
The analogy we talk about is kind of like going through war. Like It was an emotional roller coaster for definitely the three of us. And there were definitely times where we hated each other and there were times when we loved each other. But at the end of the day, we were much closer for it. And, you know, these two guys are, you know, some of my best friends now.
Yeah. And for we months, met less than a year ago.
You know, for months, we couldn't talk about this with anybody except each other. So it was kind of like, I remember seeing a documentary, like, and I'm not comparing us to the Beatles. Please don't anybody write that. I remember seeing a documentary, though, when the Beatles came to America, how, like, they would just like spend the evening like sitting in hotel rooms, locking the door and talking to each other because they couldn't share this experience with anyone but themselves. And that's honestly like that's kind of what it's been like. You can't I couldn't talk to him, couldn't talk to my friends, couldn't talk to my girlfriend about it. And that, you know, we broke up because of that. And it's like, you know, it's just that kind of experience just cements you. And like Miles said, I mean, there were times when we were just at each other's throat, like, because we weren't these lifelong friends. We didn't have these, you know, far back relationships that we could fall back on and like, oh, I trust this person because I grew up with them. It was like, I'm taking a big risk. I'm trusting this person with this thing that I've put all this intellectual time and energy into. And the truth is it paid off in spades because we're best friends. And like, I mean, proof in the pudding, like I'm, like they said, you know, I'm going off now to write and direct my first feature. And when it came time to look around and say, okay, who do I want to produce this? It's like these guys. So
I think we're going to have to hold on the questions, but we can take some after. So what we're going to do right now is we've never done this before, but we have to obviously upload videos constantly because we post videos basically every day, not quite. But so whenever we've gone to, you know, a couple conferences or events, we always find ourselves having to upload a video. So this time we thought, why don't we upload a video for you guys here? So I'm going to show you the actual process.
Yeah, this is freaking us all out, by the way, because we have no idea what's going to happen.
Okay, so right now our website runs on WordPress, which is common free blogging software, which has been kind of extended a bit. This is the, you know, back WordPress thing here. So I've linked it up to the Rever video, and the video is ready to go, and I will push publish.
So we're going to – this is the first – honor South by Southwest for presenting Aunt Alex live for all you guys.
Okay, so here we go. And then you can kind of see the responses as they come in.
There we go.
Okay, so now the video is live.
So now the video is live, so we'll go to our site.
I just responded.
I wouldn't be surprised. There are oftentimes responses before I can click back over and see the video.
So let's see. Aunt Alex is up. Let's see what we got.
Oh, there's already two. See, there you go.
So Dream yells. So you got to yell first. That's kind of, and everyone has a secret language. So first is obviously self-explanatory. They say meep. We're pretty sure it means like meep meep, like Roadrunner. It's like saying hi to people because that's how they all say hi to each other. Not sure. And then salutes the general. I guess there was a general who tried to always be
general
first.
General first.
So, yeah, general first. So, everyone, if you get first or if you think you do, you have to salute the general.
So, we can refresh
it. If you click refresh, there'll be some more, I'm sure. And no one's even watched the video yet. It's physically impossible to watch it already. They just want to talk. So, now there are five. How many comments?
There's six comments.
So, six more people. So, this will just happen for the next, you know, several hours.
It's kind of like anthropology.
Yeah. It will evolve from first to actual discussion. What happens, so it goes from... It goes from firsts, then it goes to actual discussion out the video, then it goes to just talking about what people, you know, ate for breakfast and are doing tomorrow. Then it goes to chance for new videos. So that's kind of, and people will spend, you know, the last 10 hours before we post a video, it will be like, everyone will just write new video.
One thing that's kind of interesting too is, we use like, you know, the psychological technique of random reinforcement. So we don't post videos on a schedule, right? They come out whenever. So,
they're living on our website.
Yeah, they're living on our website. Yes, absolutely.
They're
and our
amazing.
Servers, I mean, like, suffer because of it. We do have an email notification that people can sign up for, so that goes out too. But, you know, these are people that are just kind of hanging out. There's kind of an RSS feed. We're going to be starting to roll out some more official ones. Yeah. It's hard. There's a lot of things we want to do. The one unfortunate thing is that none of us are programmers. I'm very tech savvy, but I can't program. So we've kind of, initially we had, you know, fans helping us out, and then we now have a couple of people that are working for us. So I can refresh again.
Go for it.
Yeah. Can you take us to the first video that you made? You uploaded it. How did you advertise it? What did you tag it with? What did you do to distribute it to get people into Lonely Girl?
Sure.
These are trade secrets. So you guys are all under NDA.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
So The answer is we used the social networking components of YouTube. So YouTube has profile pages similar to MySpace or other social networking sites, and you can message people and friend people, et cetera, et cetera. So we actually created the character of Bree before we even uploaded a video, and we were talking to people and commenting on people's videos in character for like a week or two. And then we made a couple remix videos, which were kind of videos that were like responses to popular video bloggers. And then, you know, those got a couple thousand views, you know, 1,000 or something like that. So when we put the first video up with Bree in it, we already had a few hundred subscribers. She was already kind of known in the community. And so her first video got about 10,000 views because people knew about her. And on YouTube, there's sort of a minimum threshold to get out of, you know, the, you know, Netherland and into either the most discussed or the most viewed section. So her videos kind of right off the bat got there. And then, you know, we were very active about friending people, adding friends every day, commenting on people's videos. And again, that became part of the storytelling. So it was like, wow, we have all these features. Well, let's make this character real and have them actually interact using that technology. And it so, so that really got the initial viewers to watch it. And then after that, it was, okay, are these videos good or not? And people liked watching the videos.
It was like, you know, 50 man hours for a couple of weeks before we even put the first video. And we actually are getting hired now to run like video campaigns. So we did, Fox hired us to write, direct, edit three, you know, 2-minute videos and then run the entire, you know, internet side of it. So we kind of did our technique, got them on YouTube, got them viewed, got them embedded on other sites. They were put on a few of the, you know, kind of had them. Luckily, they were embedded on a few of the blogger sites because they were cool videos. And collectively, they got viewed like over 3 million times, these three videos. Yeah, go for it.
So you guys mentioned earlier, you talked a little bit about your business models. You also said that mentioned that you've turned down, well, the implication or what I heard was that you're potentially turning down some pretty lucrative deals from some networks and stuff like that. Maybe not. But I'm interested in how you guys are. The assumption is that you're hopefully going to monetize what you're doing. You've mentioned advertising and product placement. I'm wondering if you've already started thinking about or running into scrutiny around concepts like CPM and how you're dealing with that.
Yeah, I mean,
the internet has a pretty low CPM right now.
Right.
Totally. The goal, so for brand integration, I mean, everyone's just kind of filling the model out as we go. So, you know, it's kind of going to start with flat fees a little bit and just kind of, you know, and yeah, then go from there. As you see with the Rever ads, we get a CPM on that and it is pretty low. So it's all a work in progress.
Well, I think one thing that's changing though too is that if you look at the CPM model and cost per click model on the internet, it's based around, we don't care what the content is. So it's literally, it does not matter where the ads are. It's just literally how many people are coming here, which is totally different than the TV model, which is there is a CPM viewer component, but that number is wildly variable depending on the cachet that that show has. You know, American Idol gets much higher CPMs than some random cable show. So we're actually finding that that is starting to apply to us, and I think it will apply to premium content creators for the web, where advertisers are saying, no, we actually want to be on Lonely Girl 15. Like, we prefer that, and we will pay extra money for it. So, you know, I don't know how much extra that's going to be yet, but it'll probably increase as more and more ad, as more and more of that ad model from TV is driven to the internet rather than the internet native ad model, which was the banner ad model kind of coming up into video. So,
as much as I hate to say it, because this is absolutely fascinating stuff, and I thank you very, very much. We're out of time. We're a little bit over.
Thank you. Thank you guys.
Thank you.